This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs with Lim Soo Ann and Dashran Johan. So earlier we were talking about how to stay positive during a time of such political turmoil, such as we're seeing in Malaysia. But now on to our second story, which is about Medusa Retold.
So on our poll, we're saying that in New York, a statue of Medusa reimagines her as a figure of female empowerment. So we're asking you, what do you think of reframing popular myths or folklore to inspire different ways of thinking about justice and equality? So right now, 56% of you say that's a great idea, but also 44% of you say there's no need. You can keep taking that poll or tweet us at BFM Radio. Alternatively, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Yes, so late last week, some news about a statue made waves in New York, but also more largely on social media in general. Specifically, it was announced that a statue of Medusa, a character from Greek mythology, was being installed across from New York County Criminal Court, and more significantly, that the statue was a way to honor the hashtag MeToo movement.
So the 2-meter tall sculpture was made by Argentine-Italian artist Luciano Garbati, and it depicts an unclothed Medusa standing with a sword in one hand and the severed head of Perseus in the other. So it's described as depicting, quote-unquote, a moment of somberly empowered self-defense. And perhaps most significant, you know, is its planned location. So sculptor Garbati wrote on his Instagram, "The place chosen is not accidental, since there they judge cases for crimes related to violence against women." And of course, most recently, the New York County Criminal Court was where the Harvey Weinstein trial was held.
Yes, so if you're unfamiliar with the tale of Medusa, which appears in Ovid's Metamorphoses, Medusa was a beautiful woman who was stalked and raped in the temple of Athena by the god Poseidon. And for this, she was punished by Athena, who curses Medusa to turn into a monster with a head of snakes, and that her gaze would turn men into stone. And Medusa was also banished to live on an island, and eventually Athena and Poseidon helped the hero Perseus to hunt Medusa down, and he beheads her and displays her head on his shield as a trophy.
And this so-called triumph is depicted in one of the best-known 16th century classical sculptures, Perseus with the Head of Medusa, by Benvenuto Cellini. And in that statue, Perseus holds one hand up raised, holding Medusa's severed head, while his other hand holds a sword by his side. And this new statue by Garbati is a direct response to that. By swapping Medusa and Perseus' role in the sculpture, he questions why Medusa, who was a victim, deserved to be punished. But there are marked changes too. Medusa in the modern sculpture does not look triumphant. She isn't holding Perseus' head up. Instead, his head is held at her side, and her body language and facial expression is more determined and perhaps even tired.
So Garbati actually unveiled the statue back in 2008, but in 2018, at the height of the hashtag MeToo movement, images of his statue went viral, with women using it as a symbol of resistance worldwide. And along with sharing it across social media, many women also shared their own stories of abuse and victimization. So in an article in The Quartz, Garbati himself says he was surprised by the sudden attention. And in that same article, he says he grew up fascinated with Cellini's sculpture, and as an artist, he says he asked himself the question, what would it look like? Her victory, not his. How should that sculpture look? So it almost seems like a fitting circle to now see that statue outside the courthouse where, you know, not just the Harvey Weinstein trial was held, but so many other cases of men abusing women.
Yes, and actually this subverting of Medusa as a symbol of feminism and female anger didn't start with Garbati. There's been a strong push in 20th century feminist literature to reclaim Medusa's story, both as a story of rape and victim blaming, but also as a story of suppression of female power. So academics and theorists who have drawn on the Medusa myth include Hélène Cixous in her essay, and I quote here, "The Laugh of the Medusa," and also Mary Valentis and Anne Devane in "Female Rage, Unlocking Its Secrets, Claiming Its Power," and Ilana Dykwoman's collection of stories and poems called "They Will Know Me by My Teeth." So I don't know, you know, what did you guys think of the statue? Did it say anything to you? You know, especially in comparison to the original, the one with Perseus holding Medusa's head.
It's interesting because the original sculpture is so well known. I mean, people flock to Florence to see the sculpture, take a picture next to it, and it's almost become a symbol on its own. People don't think about the story behind it. And this sort of having this statue just makes you take a step back and think about why it's there, how, you know, Garbati is sort of turning the story, inverting the story around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head, so I'm just going to piggyback off you. And the original statue is beautiful in terms of, you know, if you don't think about it too much, it's a beautiful statue, it is iconic, but what is the reality of the story behind it? I think that is more important, and I think that's what needed to be explored. And so what we have here, this new statue where the role is flipped, I think says it speaks volumes.
That's right. And, you know, ever since the news on the statue coming to New York was announced, there has been a huge amount of praise and excitement across social media. So the idea was first mooted by New York-based photographer Beck Anderson, who spearheaded efforts to install the statue in Manhattan for the city's Art in the Parks program. And Anderson also founded Medusa with the Head, which is an art collective that strives to reframe classical narratives. So the sculpture was unveiled yesterday, the 14th of October, and will remain there until April next year. And that said, you know, despite the general praise and excitement, there has been some criticism too. Like the Daily Wire, for instance, criticizes the sculpture by saying, and I'm quoting here, "Statue featuring Medusa holding head of innocent man to be installed in Manhattan in honor of #MeToo.
Well, on the same vein, you know, others have questioned on Twitter why Medusa is holding the head of Perseus when it's Poseidon and Athena who are responsible for her persecution. So, I mean, obviously it is a twist on the Selene statue, and it makes a more effective message because it's quite a direct response.
Definitely,
to that.
Yeah.
And of course, in response to these tweets, however, France-based Malaysian author Prita Samarasan wrote on her Facebook, "This sculpture is a response to Selene's Perseus, and changing the style of form would obscure that act of what writers call writing back."
Yes, and others have also questioned whether a statue of a naked woman by a male artist actually embodies the feminism of the #MeToo movement, or whether the notion of revenge depicted in the statue was the way to go. For example, Anne Cornell, a US-based advisor on data and gender equality, tweeted, and I quote, "If anything, this sculpture reinforces a false #MeToo narrative about rage or revenge versus power and justice." Meanwhile, activist Wagadwe Wanjuki said on Twitter, also, and I quote, #MeToo was started by a black woman, but a sculpture of a European character by a dude is the commentary that gets centered. Sigh.
So all of this got us thinking about this notion of reframing mythologies and folklores as a form of empowerment, and how art can be a pretty powerful way of doing that. So to help give us an insider's perspective, we have on the line local artist Yanti Ismail, who is known for her strongly feminist perspective when it comes to her art. Thanks for joining us, Yanti. First of all, what was your reaction to seeing the statue Medusa with the head of Perseus?
When I first saw the image of the statue, Medusa with the head of Perseus, a few years ago, my first reaction was how brilliant this reimagining is. I mean, we've become so familiar with this one representation or depiction of the Medusa myth. And it seems like the depictions that are common are always describing the myth at its worst. This archetype of a vengeful monster woman. And this artist Garbati really provided an alternative narrative that was refreshing and rather empowering. And it's interesting because even for myself, I never really considered Medusa before. It had never really interested me because it felt so one-dimensional. But Garbati, the artist, his work made me read a little bit more about the myth, and I saw the injustices that had happened to Medusa. It appeared that the Medusa story was being retold in a patriarchal or male-dominated society, and the rape, the injustice that happened to her was overshadowed by this other narrative that far better suited the norms of the culture at that time. Medusa, to me, became a symbol of feminist rage, and that's something that I'm particularly intrigued by, because we are always trying to negate the feminist rage. in Garbati's work, the Medusa statue. She's angry. I mean, you can see it from her face. She has a steely determination. But that anger does not make her a monster. And I thought that was really important. There's an author, Soraya Chamali, that I greatly admire, whose book was Rage Becomes Her. And it brilliantly articulates this complex and multifaceted idea of female rage in a patriarchal world. Now, Chamali said that anger is a human emotion. It's neither good nor bad. But what it is, it's a signal emotion. It warns us of indignity, of threat, of insult, of harm. And yet in culture after culture, anger is reserved for the moral property of boys and men. Women are chastised against erupting in anger. Even when anger is valid, even when it's triggered by the injustices women face every day for being women. And when women do erupt in anger, they are demonized. They are made to look like monsters. I mean, of course, this is a metaphor for what we see in imageries of mythological tales, but you can see that reality today as well. The female that speaks out in anger or in assertion in a professional setting is demonized.
So, you know, what are your thoughts on reimagining or shifting the lens of the stories we pass on, like myths, folklore, and so on, to a female-centered one?
I'm glad that there is an increasing appetite for reimagining stories, you know, deconstructing the way stories are being told. I mean, of course, when you see it in popular culture, in Hollywood, when it became clear that reimagining stories with women at the helm, as women as heroes, became commercially opportune, then we started seeing that kind of narrative come up more and more. But these are narratives that need to be changed. I think for far too long, folklore or stories are told with women portrayed a certain way, and I think that is to serve a certain patriarchal agenda, because it is a reflection of the times, and it's a reflection of why those stories were written. Why else do you have narratives of evil stepmothers, cruel stepmothers, the female figure put in that role, or witches? You have on the other side, behavior that's rewarded are for characters of girls who are passive or obedient, are beautiful and have kindness. Fairy tales reinforce this idea that women are prizes to be won. And let's not forget, these kinds of fairy tales also create a narrative that's unrealistic about men as well, that you must be brave, you must have no fear, no anxiety. All this creates a culture that is unhealthy for both men and women.
And what can visualizing these narratives through paintings, sculptures, and so on add to the narrative? What can art bring to social justice causes or messages?
I do believe that to a certain extent, we can construct reality. I mean, the pervasive imagery that we see right now of gender roles and women and the beauty myths, that's all constructed. We didn't start out that way. We learned that behavior. We learned that belief system. It can all be unlearned. Certainly for myself, through my art, that's something that I try to challenge all the time. I mean, we have in our minds an image of women that has been constructed by mass media. And she is usually fair-skinned, she is thin, she's able-bodied. And that's the narrative that we pass down generationally, to the point where now that's what we believe to be the correct model of beauty, and that's not right. We need to be celebrating diversity, but more than that, and this is where it gets really hard to understand, we need to be challenging this idea of women as mere bodies. While we celebrate the diversity, we need to push deeper than that and deconstruct this idea that women are judged based on their physicality. And that's many steps more down the road. But it's important to do, you know. These are the kinds of stories that you need to start telling, and art can certainly do that, to reconstruct the way we see the world that we live in. And when we look at art as a tool for promoting social justice, I mean, this is what art activism is about, you know. Activist art describes art that's grounded in the act of doing, addressing political or social issues. And it's not a new concept. Throughout history, there have been effective civic movements that have married the arts with campaigns for social justice and social change. So I see art activism as combining the creative power of the arts to provoke us emotionally with the strategic planning of activism to push for social change. I've worked long enough in the human rights field to know that social change can only happen when people feel personally moved to change their minds because of a powerful stimuli. Creating and sustaining lasting change demands a change in values, in our beliefs, in our patterns of behavior. Activism can change laws and policies to be more just and equitable, but laws alone cannot provoke change at a much deeper level, at a much visceral level, in our culture and understanding of who we are as human beings. How else is it that laws against sexual violence, for instance, these laws exist, yet it has been insufficient to stop violent assault, sexual assault against women, because laws alone cannot change a patriarchal belief system that sees women as lesser than men. So to change the world, we need to imagine what a changed world might look like.
Yanti, as someone who makes female-centered or feminist art, what are some of the reactions you get, both positive and negative?
You know, my art presents woman, a type of woman that challenges what is common in mass media, and that makes people uncomfortable. When I was, I did a project for Women's Day last year, where I painted a mural out on the streets in Bangsa, and being in such a public space, it was easy for people to drop by and, you know, interact and engage with you while you're painting. And I remember quite a few men were deeply uncomfortable by the fact that I was painting a woman who was voluptuous. That seemed to offend their sensibilities for some reason. And it made me really reflect on that, because, yes, they are a product of the culture. You know, you've seen a woman of only one type, and that's what you think is true, but it's not, and it can be deconstructed. I was just reading an article yesterday about in the 1930s, a woman was jailed for daring to wear pants in court in the 1930s. And now it's common. Nobody would blink at a woman wearing pants. That was a social construct that had been deconstructed and normalized. And that's what we can do. And that's what art can do as well.
And are there local examples that do similar things to, like, the Medusa statue? You know, are there local legends or stories that you'd like to explore or perhaps reimagine in your work?
Oh, there are plenty of artists who are working to reimagine the stories that have been passed down, or even the reality that we've existed in, which shouldn't be accepted as a status quo. And many of them are really doing excellent work with Orang Asli, with indigenous communities, with ethnic minorities, and then, yes, with feminism as well. One artist that I particularly admire, Yi Ilan, had produced an exhibition a few years ago entitled "Like the Banana Tree at the Gate," and it was really interesting. She was taking this the simple idea of the Pontianak, which is a vengeful female spirit of a woman who died at childbirth, and this lore is echoed in narratives in a few countries in the Southeast Asian region. And what Ilan's done is a new reflection. And this is the reflection of the Pontianak. And Ilan's reinterpretation looks at Pontianak as a symbol of feminism in Malay mythology. This woman who doesn't bow down to patriarchy, takes control of her sexuality. And
And that's powerful, and that's strong, and she, her sexuality is no longer for the express purpose of reproduction or just to please men. And I thought that was really, really refreshing. I mean, I'd never seen Pontiana interpreted that way before. And you can really see that if you look within into our own laws, there are many stories that you can reimagine and reinterpret. What I'm working on now is somewhat similar to reinterpreting these ideas that have been long accepted. It's a personal project called On Whose Shoulders We Stand. It's based on this idea that patriarchal systems means that our identities are officially linked only to the father. And I want to recognize women, honoring our foremothers, and because women often get left out of historic moments, and I want to honor them.
Thank you so much, Yanti. That was Yanti Ismail, a Malaysian artist.
So on this topic, we had a Twitter poll running where we were asking you, what do you think of reframing popular myths or folklore to inspire different ways of thinking about justice and equality? And this is, of course, running along the news that the statue of Medusa reimagines her as a figure of female empowerment. So right now, 56% of you say it's a great idea, but 44% of you say there's no need. And we've got a comment from Irfan Navin, who says that, yes, Medusa was wronged by the gods of Greek mythology, much like the many women who have suffered from sexual harassment or rape in the hands of Weinstein. So it's a powerful image for the hashtag MeToo movement.
Exactly. And I, you know, do look forward to other people commenting about this. And I'm sure you have lots of thoughts. Continue to share that with us. You know, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. I'm afraid, though, that's all the time we have for today's show. Do look us up on Facebook, The Bigger Picture, if you'd like to drop us a message. Or you can download the podcast if you missed the show by heading to bfm.my/dailydigest. You can go to the BFM app, or you can go to Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on By the Book, we have Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin chatting with Professor Maria Tata about her book, The Fairest of Them All, Snow White and the 21 Tales of Mothers and Daughters. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. So do stay tuned for that. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.